Hello, everyone. My name is Sergio Medina, and you're listening to another episode of the Sink or Swim podcast. Today, we're tackling one of the most controversial topics in modern medicine, the anti-vaccine or anti-vax movement. Vaccines have been one of the most successful public health measures in human history, saving millions of lives by preventing diseases that once ravaged populations. Measles, smallpox, polio, and countless others. And yet, despite overwhelming scientific evidence proving their safety and effectiveness, we find ourselves, even in the 21st century, battling a movement that claims vaccines do more harm than good. But just how did we get here? How did this modern anti-vax movement gain such a foothold, sowing distrust in a practice that has saved so many lives? At the center of this controversy is a man named Andrew Wakefield, whose now discredited 1998 research paper falsely linking the MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, and rubella, to autism, fueled fears that persist to this day. In this episode, we'll take a deep dive into Andrew Wakefield's story, who he was, what his motivations were, and how his fraudulent studies set off a chain reaction of fear and mistrust. In the late 1990s, the anti-vaccine movement started to gain traction, fueled by claims that vaccines cause autism. This movement attracted the support of several celebrities, including Jim Carrey and Kevin Gates. Even Donald Trump, the former president, famously tweeted, quote, "No more massive injections, tiny children are not horses," end quote. But with an entire movement behind this idea, complete with documentaries, websites, and thousands of members on social media platforms like Facebook, and even the backing of a former U.S. president, why does the scientific community still insist these people are wrong? The debate over vaccines is complex and multifaceted, and it has persisted for over two decades without resolution. Interestingly, the anti-vaccine movement is not new. Back in the 1800s, when vaccines were first introduced, a similar movement arose, but eventually faded, likely due to smallpox. Today, the primary claim is that vaccines might cause autism. But just what evidence supports this notion? So without further ado, I want to go ahead into the first part, which is sort of the simple breakdown of everything. So in 1998, a study alleged a connection between the MMR vaccine and autism. The MMR vaccine protects against measles, mumps, and rubella, sparing children from multiple painful shots. This study was published in The Lancet, as I'm sure a lot of you know, which is a highly regarded medical journal, lending it some credibility. However, the paper was eventually discredited due to flawed science, and other studies on millions of children found no link between the vaccine and autism. As a result, the journal retracted the paper, and the word retracted is now stamped across every page in large letters. So, as shaky as it sounds, that was essentially all the evidence the anti-vaccine movement had. No other credible evidence has been found to support these claims. While some fringe theories propose that a particular chemical in the vaccines might cause autism, the premise is fundamentally flawed since vaccines don't cause autism in the first place. The anti-vaccine movement had little credible evidence 20 years ago, and it has even less now. At this point, most people who are anti-vaccine have likely already encountered this information and still remain unconvinced. If you're undecided about vaccines, you're unlikely to change your mind just because someone mentions a retracted paper. But what if you do want to change someone's mind on issues like this? The research here isn't exactly promising. Studies show that once someone becomes personally invested in a belief, they tend to be more closed-minded. Political science professor Brendan Nyhan and his team spent 3 years studying how over 1,700 parents responded to various methods of persuading them to vaccinate their children. They found that none of the strategies worked for parents who were already opposed to vaccination, and in some cases, trying to correct false claims actually made these parents more resistant to vaccines. And I couldn't agree more with what Mr. Nyhan told The New Yorker, quote, "This is depressing." So the real question is, when someone is wrong about something, how do you change their mind? See, me personally, I'm not exactly sure how to do this. But maybe we'll get some insights by examining what first led people to believe that vaccines are dangerous. And by doing that, we should probably start by revisiting that 1998 study. Because let's be honest, how many people on either side of this debate have actually read it? Most people don't read scientific papers. They prefer to watch videos or read blogs that reinforce their pre-existing beliefs. To be fair, that's how I was first introduced to this topic too. I trusted the people who said that the science in this paper was flawed. So let's actually take a look at this paper and assess what it says to reach an honest conclusion about its findings. So moving on to the next part, which is actually analyzing this study released by Mr. Wakefield. So the study we're talking about had quite the long name, and it goes ileolymphoid nodular hyperplasia, nonspecific colitis, and pervasive development disorder in children, which is quite the mouthful, right? The lead author, Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who has since lost his medical license, is often credited as the person who kicked off the modern anti-vaccine movement. His paper aimed to explore a possible connection between bowel disorders and developmental issues in children, specifically autism. For those unfamiliar, colitis is inflammation of the colon, often seen in diseases like IBD or inflammatory bowel disease. The term nonspecific colitis here just means that the paper wasn't focusing on any particular type of inflammation, but rather on any inflammation that these children had. The idea was to see if there was a pattern and whether these issues were linked to autism. Wakefield claimed he noticed many children with both autism and bowel disorders, which prompted him to study this potential link. So, where do vaccines come into this? The paper's scientific findings included that some parents believed their child's autism symptoms started after receiving the MMR vaccine. That's it. The study claimed that the onset of behavioral symptoms was reported by parents to follow the MMR shot. You'd think there would be more evidence, right? But no. It's just parents' recollections, which isn't exactly solid science. The gap between scientific investigation and what parents thought they remembered is quite striking. One mother, for example, said her child's behavior dramatically deteriorated the day after receiving the vaccine. That kind of personal account is not exactly a reliable scientific finding. In fact, the paper includes a table where each child's diagnosis and the parents' opinions about the cause are listed. Unsurprisingly, many parents blame the vaccine. While personal recollections can be valuable in understanding human behavior, they're not evidence of causality. We tend to link two events when they happen close together in time, like eating something unfamiliar and getting sick. It's part of how our brains evolve to protect us. But correlation does not equal causation, especially when it comes to something as complex as a child's behavioral development. Autism symptoms can develop gradually over time, and many parents only notice once the signs become a lot more obvious. However, that doesn't mean that the symptoms weren't present earlier. To add some context, the average age that autism symptoms become noticeable to parents is between around 12 to 18 months, and children in the UK receive the MMR vaccine between 12 to 15 months. Is it possible that parents are mistakenly linking the timing of the vaccine to a natural progression of the condition? Some parents even blamed other coincidental events, like one parent blaming their child's autism on an ear infection or otitis media a week before the symptoms appeared. Clearly, not everything that happens before autism symptoms appear can be the cause. Before Wakefield's study, there were very few parents who believed vaccines caused autism. One group, JABS, or Justice Awareness and Basic Support, was founded by Jackie Fletcher, who claimed her son became autistic just 10 days after his MMR shot. She has repeatedly tried to sue the government and vaccine manufacturers over it. Still, before the study was published, this group had only a small number of members, around 30. After the study, that number exploded into the thousands. Another issue with the study was the sample size. It was based on just 12 children, which isn't statistically significant. While small pilot studies are common to help guide larger research, the conclusions drawn from this study weren't substantial enough to support Wakefield's claims. A sample of 12 children cannot possibly provide definitive conclusions for an entire population. In summary, the science behind the study is weak at best. In fact, the study even admits in its conclusion that it didn't prove a connection between the MMR vaccine and autism. Wakefield speculated that the vaccine might cause autism by affecting the bowel, but this theory was unproven. By couching his findings in terms of, quote, possibility, Wakefield allowed the media to run with the idea that the vaccine was dangerous. Even more alarming, Wakefield cited a questionable paper by ex-Dr. Fudenberg, whose claims of curing autism and linking it to vaccines were published in a fringe journal that went out of business just shortly after. Fudenberg's medical license was revoked for stealing controlled substances, making his work highly dubious. Yet Wakefield cited him to bolster his own claims. The Lancet actually published a commentary alongside Wakefield's paper, warning that such unproven claims could lead to fear-mongering and societal harm by discouraging vaccinations. Unfortunately, their warnings were spot on, and this was actually darkly prophetic. Despite the scientific community raising serious concerns, Wakefield pushed forward, even holding a press conference to call for the separation of the MMR vaccine into three individual shots, something that would later ignite widespread fear about vaccines. This was the pivotal moment when Wakefield's unproven claims caught fire in the media, and the anti-vaccine movement as we know it today truly began. And so I want to jump into some of the specifics here. With regards to the conclusion, I kind of want to add some specific statements and quotes. But in the paper's conclusion, it states, quote, "We did not prove an association between MMR vaccine and the syndrome described. Virological studies are underway that may help to resolve this issue," end quote. So, as some of you may know, especially those of you who are already in med school or even just in pre-med and are involved in research, you're expected to state the limitations of your study, especially towards the end. Medical journals have higher standards for what constitutes as solid proof. But like I mentioned earlier, Wakefield essentially uses this as a shield for himself. He's able to hide behind this as a defense to claim that he didn't prove anything so that he can speculate about a lot of things that he hasn't proved. For example, the children appear to have shared similar, though non-specific, bowel problems. Wakefield essentially gathers this vague collection of similar things and concludes with the theory that could make his career, and that was that the vaccine may cause autism and it happens through the bowels. So Wakefield states, quote, "We have identified a chronic enterocolitis in children that may be related to neuropsychiatric dysfunction. In most cases, onset of symptoms was after MMR immunization. Further investigations are needed to examine this syndrome and its possible relation to this vaccine," end quote. So in literally the final sentences of the paper, Wakefield invents this new disease that combines bowel disorders and autism, and then speculates that MMR vaccination might cause the disease he just created. I mean, yeah, he did admit that maybe, you know, it was a possibility and that we needed more research to prove anything, but now this disease that he essentially invented is in a published scientific paper that is in one of the most prestigious medical journals in the world. And journalists with little to no scientific knowledge go on to report on this paper like it's discovering a brand new disease. I also wanted to talk a little bit more about this interesting character, Dr. Fudenberg. So Fudenberg has a paper in 1996 that's cited in a fringe journal, like I mentioned earlier, called Biotherapy, that ended up going out of business 2 years later. The paper itself was a pilot study on the effects of a substance called dialyzable lymphocyte extract on children with autism, in addition to alleging that several of the children had become autistic within a week of getting vaccinated, he claimed that this extract he created could, quote, cure autism. The paper reports of the 22 with classic autism, 10 became normal, and that they were mainstreamed in school and clinical characteristics were fully normalized. Interestingly enough, at the time that the study was published, he didn't have a medical license. It was actually revoked the year before because, like I mentioned before, he was caught stealing controlled substances from his job for personal use. The South Carolina Medical Board found him guilty of engaging in dishonorable, unethical, or unprofessional conduct. He admitted he'd done it in the hearing, too. So he got caught stealing drugs, admitted it, got fired, lost all credibility, and probably wasn't allowed within 2 inches of a stethoscope. And then a year later, he suddenly cured autism, according to him. So ex-Dr. Fudenberg's paper being one of the most odd things that I've read, and this was what Wakefield had to cite to create this precedent for his findings. This was the best that he could get. In scientific circles, everyone who read Wakefield's paper, or worse, even bothered to check the sources it cited, had a few minor concerns, to say the least. And like I mentioned before, it was so concerning that The Lancet published in the same issue a response to the paper itself. Quote, vaccine adverse effects, causal or coincidental. It points out numerous problems, some of which I discussed here already, and has some words to say about fear-mongering about vaccines like this, which I mentioned ended up being darkly prophetic. It said that, quote, vaccine safety concerns such as that reported by Wakefield and colleague may snowball into societal tragedies when the media and the public confuse association with causality and shun immunization. This would be tragic because passion would then conquer reason and the facts again in the UK, end quote. So I think it's important that, because I remember, I mean, even in pre-med, I feel like I was taught to differentiate between correlation and causality. And I can't think of a more critical example than this, where even, you know, afterwards, like the paper was proven to just be completely fraudulent. That is important that for any study that comes out that only really establishes an association, to keep an open mind and still try to look for more like studies and explanations that are usually warranted after studies are done in general. So really interesting how that played out into something as important as the anti-vax movement. Another interesting thing before I move on to the next part is that despite a lot of obvious concerns and clear weaknesses, you know, he published a study anyway, but then he immediately held a press conference about it afterwards. And see, that's not something that anyone normally does in science, especially after publishing like just a 5-page study that even admits in the conclusion that it didn't even prove anything. The paper was so small and its findings so insignificant that it barely even qualifies as a paper, and in fact it was published in The Lancet as an early report. So holding a press conference for this is something you want if you want attention for your controversial paper, not if you're actually trying to do science. So here's where the whole thing really started. During the conference, Wakefield pretended that his study had discovered a risk so earth-shaking that the government should stop using the MMR vaccine and replace it with measles, mumps, and rubella vaccines given separately. And like I mentioned before, this is the moment that changed everything. He told a room full of reporters that based on his study, he felt that the MMR vaccine could be putting millions of children at risk. The mainstream media were in love with the notion that the paper had found something, so unfortunately, they ran with it. And that leads me to my next segment, which is discussing the media's role in amplifying the vaccine scare. So Wakefield's flawed paper might have been the initial spark, but the media's role in inflating the public's fears was crucial. While scientific papers themselves rarely cause mass hysteria, sensational headlines and alarming news stories do. In the mid-2000s, media outlets across television, newspapers, and radio were echoing the same terrifying narrative. MMR might cause autism. Without understanding or reviewing the actual research, journalists heavily reported on the supposed link, capitalizing on the controversy. The allure of a scandal involving public health was simply too enticing to pass up. The incessant coverage fostered widespread fear and vaccine hesitancy. Parents who previously had no reason to suspect the connection between MMR and autism suddenly found themselves inundated with alarming reports. Despite the study being widely discredited, the damage was already done. For many, it wasn't the science but the constant media barrage that convinced them of the vaccine's danger. The narrative of a possible connection between MMR and autism became so pervasive that for some, it morphed into undeniable fact. And next, I want to discuss the autism, the fact that, how autism was exploited for sensationalism. So rather than presenting autism as a nuanced, complex condition with varying degrees of severity, the media often exploited the most extreme cases to stoke public fear. Children with severe communication challenges or physical disabilities were the focus of many segments, painting autism as an almost unbearable tragedy. This further fueled parental fears, making the idea of risking potentially fatal diseases like measles seem preferable to having an autistic child. In these reports, the reality of preventable diseases like measles was downplayed. Even though measles can cause serious complications and death, which I'll talk about a little later, the media focused on the perceived horrors of autism. The public's understanding of autism became skewed, and the fear of it grew out of proportion to the reality of the condition. So, during the media frenzy, Andrew Wakefield became something of a celebrity, appearing in countless interviews and often repeating his recommendation for separate vaccines, which he claimed could mitigate the risk of autism. He frequently mentioned his concerns about the MMR vaccine in these interviews, despite his claims being debunked. It is interesting to note that while the modern anti-vaccine movement opposes all vaccines, Wakefield himself was not anti-vaccine. He was simply against the combined MMR vaccine. Wakefield's insistence on separate vaccines came at a significant cost to parents, and it's worth considering whether he had ulterior motives. His advocacy for separate vaccines, which cost around £60 per shot in the UK, created a lucrative market for alternative vaccine options. Despite his theory being rejected by the scientific community, his ability to sow doubt remained strong, driven in large part by his repeated appearances in the media. The irresponsible reporting surrounding Wakefield's study had disastrous consequences. Vaccination rates plummeted, and outbreaks of preventable diseases such as measles followed. In Ireland, for instance, a measles outbreak led to the tragic deaths of 3 children. Despite overwhelming evidence against Wakefield's claims, fear continued to spread, making it difficult for health officials to restore public confidence in vaccines. The larger issue is the media's tendency to sensationalize health risks without fully understanding the underlying science. In their rush to cover a scandalous story, they contributed to a movement that still affects public health today. By amplifying pseudoscience and exaggerating the risks of vaccines, the media created a lasting climate of fear that continues to impact vaccination rates globally. And so, touching a bit on the potentially lethal complications of measles, we actually learned this in med school. Shorthand for it was like the acronym was SSPE. I think it was like pan-sclerosing encephalitis, subsclerotic panencephalitis, I think is the actual term. It was a, albeit rare, very rare complication, but it was an incurable, practically fatal complication that some children did have when they contracted measles. So the thing is, like, people don't realize how deadly it can be because, you know, prior to the anti-vaccine movement, we had pretty much eliminated the measles virus from the country. So the public, especially those who aren't like particularly medically inclined, weren't aware of just how serious these viruses can be. And again, it is a relatively rare, it is like a rare disease, or rather a rare complication to occur from being infected with measles. That really wouldn't change the perspective of someone whose child ends up having that complication. And the worst part about it is that it's completely preventable with the vaccine. So I can't imagine being a parent and then having a child catch measles because, you know, vaccination rates fall, less people are vaccinated, so it's easier to catch the virus. There's also the scenario where a child can get infected because they haven't been vaccinated yet, or they can't get vaccinated for actual legitimate reasons. And then they end up dying because they end up having that lethal complication associated with measles that's completely preventable with something like a vaccine, which has been proven to be successful for years now. And again, I just want to get into a little bit of the specifics here. Remember when I mentioned that disease that he was speculating about towards the end of his paper, that there might be some kind of bowel disorder caused by MMR that then leads to autism? So this came up in the media a lot as well, where they often question, you know, could the MMR vaccine be causing a strange new kind of bowel disease that made children autistic? So for a specific quote here, Dr. Wakefield, or ex-Dr. Wakefield, claimed, quote, "There is a bowel disease, a new syndrome associated with regressive autism, and that may be related to MMR," end quote. Eventually, he even came up with the name for it, autistic enterocolitis. Wakefield's theory is that the almost dead measles virus present in the MMR vaccine can get stuck in the intestine somehow, causing all that inflammation they apparently found in the study, which leads it to being unable to digest certain foods like milk or bread and properly, and then turning it into a, quote, morphine-like substance, end quote, which then leaks out of the bowel and into the brain, and then that's how it would cause autism. So a pretty strange theory. One of the many strange things about it is that it specifically implicates the measles part of the vaccine. If measles, when in a vaccine, can cause a syndrome that leads to autism, how could you possibly be so certain that the separate vaccine for measles would be safe? He goes on to say, quote, "It may be that the measles on its own reduces the risk of this particular syndrome developing," end quote. So there's a reason why he recommended the separate vaccine so much, which I'll get to later. Here is one example of an interviewer asking him to explain himself. Quote, "Even supposing that the measles element of the MMR vaccine had deposited the virus in the intestinal tissue of these children, a single jab of measles might do the same, no?" And pretty much Wakefield just responds by, you know, he says theoretically it might. And then he just continues to say that, like, I said theoretically. And then when asked by the interviewer, you know, pressed on it, like, how can you advocate for a single jab if, like, you're saying there's only a theoretic possibility that it might damage the children? And Wakefield responds that while that question mark exists, at the very least, parents deserve a choice for how they protect their children against these infections, whether it be with the MMR vaccine or with the single vaccines. So he always found a way to pivot amidst these concerns that parents should have at least the option of the separate vaccine. Even when questioned about, you know, the logical inconsistency there about, you know, how can you be sure that the single measles vaccine would be safe as opposed to the measles and the combined vaccine, he was never really able to answer that question directly. And he just kept pivoting back to saying, oh, you know, either way, you know, a parent deserves the option for a singular vaccine as opposed to combined. Well, that doesn't answer the question, and it's a very legitimate one. And honestly, you'd think he was some kind of salesman for alternative vaccines the way he was talking, interestingly. So, per the United States Court of Federal Claims, it states, not only has autistic enterocolitis not been accepted into gastroenterology textbooks, but that theory has been strongly criticized as constituting defective or fraudulent science. But an ordinary person, or even worse, a journalist, might not understand it enough to know that it doesn't really make sense. So, of course, it got reported as this interesting new idea. One specific defensive journalist, Melanie Phillips, quoted that it was a bold and controversial theory. And she was one of the most well-paid journalists in Britain at the time, who was still continuing to spread it in an article about being criticized for spreading it. She called it a unique gut-brain disease. So when you imagine a new disease, of course, it's going to sound unique. And this completely unproved, unique, controversial theory was just irresistible for journalists, particularly Ms. Phillips. And just for some additional context, this journalist, Ms. Phillips, was named a Bigot of the Year award-winning writer who was famous for also denying climate change, calling Obama an Islamist, and opposing both Irish independence and gay rights, among others. So it's not shocking that this lady, you know, didn't exactly have the most intellectual insight when it came to the MMR vaccine. And uncritically regurgitating everything that Wakefield said to millions of people, which essentially the entire rest of the British media was doing, as they were on the same side as her. Just repeating what he was saying uncritically, you know, without really like wondering, or I guess without even the semblance of like just how harmful could it be to push this narrative of anti-vaccination sentiment. So to sum up this segment, if you want to know why thousands of parents think MMR gave their children autism, it's not because they came to that conclusion on their own. So we've seen how before all this reporting happened, only a small minority of parents made that connection between autism and the vaccines. They could only find 7 parents of autistic children who blamed MMR in the original study. The only thing that changed was how many news outlets were telling everyone that the vaccine might cause it. After years of the media telling them it could have been the jab, some parents started to believe it. One sample news piece reported, quote, "The symptoms started to appear when he was just 2, soon after he had his MMR. This is the age at which autism usually develops, but his parents don't believe it is coincidence," end quote. His parents don't believe it was a coincidence because every news resource was telling them it might have something to do with the vaccine. And trusting that the media had done the work and knew that what they were talking about, they believed what they were being told. The end result of publications and broadcasts like this was a lot of concerned parents, a lot of unvaccinated children, and a whole lot of new cases of measles. And so with that, I want to go into the next very important segment, the underlying incentive behind all of it. So imagine if Wakefield were promoting an alternative vaccine. Wouldn't that raise concerns about a conflict of interest? Well, 6 months before his study was published, Wakefield filed a patent for an alternative measles vaccine. Enter Brian Deer, an award-winning investigative journalist with expertise in exposing medical fraud and a particular focus on the pharmaceutical industry. He was one of the few reporters who didn't take Wakefield's claims at face value and began digging deeper into his background and motives. After Deer made a simple call to the hospital where Wakefield worked, Wakefield's publicist filed a complaint against him within just 3 hours. But this only piqued Deer's interest. In his 2004 documentary, MMR: What They Didn't Tell You, Deer revealed the extent of Wakefield's plot, including the discovery of Wakefield's patent. The patent described a, quote, "new vaccine immunization for the prevention of measles," end quote. It was filed in June 1997, indicating that Wakefield had completed most of his study before rushing to patent a competing vaccine he could profit from. And who was listed as a co-inventor? Well, none other than Dr. Fudenberg, the previously mentioned ex-doctor who thought he could cure autism using his own bone marrow. His name appeared on the patent alongside Wakefield's, and his company, Neuroimmune Therapeutics Research Foundation, was listed with a business address that Deere later found had been replaced by a real estate agency. When Deere tracked down Fudenberg, the disgraced doctor still claimed he could cure autism, saying it involved a cheap oral treatment that was, quote, one pill every other day for 3 to 6 months, end quote. When asked where someone could obtain this miraculous cure, Fudenberg replied, quote, from my bone marrow, end quote. By 1999, Wakefield had founded several medical companies, including Immunospecifics Biotechnologies Limited and Carmo Healthcare Limited, named after his wife, whom he later divorced. He started seeking investors based on the conveniently timed patent he had filed just before the health scare he helped create. Besides the vaccine, Wakefield also had plans to profit from testing kits for this autistic enterocolitis, which was the condition that he had fabricated. His confidential business prospectus, obtained by Deere, estimated that profits from litigation-driven testing could reach millions in both the UK and USA. The initial market for these diagnostic kits would focus on, quote, parent groups and lawyers representing affected individuals, end quote, according to the document. However, cracks started to show. The condition Wakefield invented just didn't exist, making it difficult to develop a legitimate test for it. In Ireland, where Wakefield founded Unigenetics Limited, he enlisted the help of colleague John O'Leary to develop a testing kit that could supposedly detect the measles virus in the bowels of autistic children. Despite initial claims of success, O'Leary's results quickly fell apart when other labs couldn't replicate them. It turned out that their testing equipment was contaminated, and when their work came under scrutiny, the positive results disappeared. Meanwhile, investors grew weary of Wakefield's involvement with Fudenberg, whose reputation as a, let's face it, a quack doctor made secure funding even more challenging. According to Wakefield's troubles, a shakeup occurred at the Royal Free Hospital. A shakeup occurred at the Royal Free Hospital where he worked. A new head of medicine, Dr. Mark Pepys, arrived in 1999. Pepys, an expert in related scientific fields, saw through Wakefield's claims and raised concerns about the flawed science and clear conflicts of interest behind Wakefield's business ventures. Despite this, Wakefield was offered continued employment if he agreed to conduct a large-scale study to properly investigate his original claims. Wakefield agreed, but he never followed through with the study, leading to his eventual departure from the hospital in 2001. Even as his career in legitimate medicine came to an end, Wakefield continued to frame himself as a victim, claiming that his dismissal was due to the unpopularity of his research. However, the real reason was his inability to substantiate his own findings. Deere's investigation only gained momentum, revealing more inconsistencies in Wakefield's work, including the fact that Wakefield had already searched for and failed to find the measles virus in the gut of autistic children, a discovery made by Dr. Nick Chadwick, who worked on the original study. Chadwick's findings were omitted from the final publication, and he requested that his name be removed from the paper because he himself was uncomfortable with Wakefield's continued assertions. Yet despite these revelations, Wakefield continued to push his theory, even appearing in BBC documentaries, claiming that definitive proof could be years away. However, Deere's relentless investigation led to the public unraveling of Wakefield's fraudulent claims. By 2003, Deere uncovered even more incriminating details about the study and Wakefield's motivations. As Wakefield's credibility crumbled, he filed a defamation lawsuit against Deere and the media outlets that published his findings. But the damage was done. In 2004, 10 of the original study's 13 authors publicly retracted the interpretation section of the paper, effectively discrediting the research that had fueled the anti-vaccine movement. Thus, the foundation of the anti-vaccine movement, based on a fraudulent study designed to make its creator millions, began to collapse under the weight of its own falsehoods. And one last interesting note before I move on to the next segment is, you know, obviously after discovering all of this, Brian Deere had even more questions for Wakefield, which Wakefield at that point was continuing to avoid. Deere eventually went to an autism conference Wakefield was speaking at. After his presentation, Deere approached him with questions, and the instant that he recognized Brian Deere, the guy he's been actively avoiding for over a year, he just turns and leaves the room as fast as he can. So Wakefield's only defense against his clear financial incentive to discredit the MMR vaccine is to just run away and hide and hope you just leave him alone. And since Deere clearly wasn't doing that, that's when Wakefield decided to escalate and file that defamation lawsuit. And so at this point, I'm sure you're thinking, the evidence can't get that much worse, right? Well, unfortunately, it does. So my next segment, more evidence. So Brian Deere's investigation went deeper, uncovering that 2 years before the infamous study was published, Andrew Wakefield had actually been hired by a lawyer named Richard Barr. Barr saw an opportunity for a class action lawsuit against the MMR vaccine manufacturers, which could lead to millions in profits. But there was no evidence linking the vaccine to autism. So he paid Wakefield £150 an hour, eventually totaling more than £435,000, which translates to over $1.1 million today, to find evidence that could be used in court. This payment was more than eight times Wakefield's annual salary back at his hospital job. 6 months before The Lancet published the study, Barr wrote Wakefield a letter stating the study's true aim, to produce irrefutable evidence in court that vaccines were dangerous. JABS, the advocacy group that I mentioned earlier, also played a role in the lawsuit, helping to recruit many of the parents for the study. Some parents were even litigants in the lawsuit, and JABS founder Jackie Fletcher was a key figure in connecting Barr with parents who blamed vaccines for their children's autism. Not all the parents were aware that the study was linked to a lawsuit, but they were all carefully selected to fit the narrative. In fact, since very few parents in the 1990s believed vaccines caused autism, Wakefield and Barr had to search extensively, even flying in Child 11 from California to participate. Many of the doctors on the study were unaware that Wakefield was being paid to discredit the MMR vaccine. Wakefield's secrecy and his decision to work separately with each scientist allowed him to control the narrative and keep the true motivations hidden. As a result, even the doctors and scientists involved were deceived into contributing to a study that was actually meant to support a lawsuit, not to pursue actual genuine scientific discovery. When these revelations came to light, the General Medical Council opened a fitness to practice hearing against Wakefield, scrutinizing the ethics of the study. This hearing would last 217 days, making it the longest in General Medical Council history. Meanwhile, Wakefield's lawsuit against Brian Deere actually backfired. This libel case allowed Deere to access to confidential medical records, which revealed the fraudulent nature of the study. Wakefield eventually dropped the lawsuit, but by then, Deere had uncovered enough evidence to continue his investigation. Deere's reporting showed that the study's claims about the children's health were often fabricated. For example, Child 11's father reviewed the study's description of his son and confirmed that this was inaccurate. The study claimed his son developed autistic symptoms within a week of receiving the MMR vaccine, but the father stated that symptoms began 2.5 to 3 months later. Many other parents found similar discrepancies between the study's claims and their children's actual medical histories. Wakefield manipulated data to make it appear as though most of the children developed autism shortly after receiving the MMR vaccine, when in reality, many of the children's symptoms either started too late to support the lawsuit or had begun before they were vaccinated. Additionally, Wakefield claimed that 11 of the 12 children in the study had a new bowel disorder, the autistic enterocolitis I mentioned earlier, which he invented to support the lawsuit. However, medical records showed that only 3 children had significant bowel inflammation. Wakefield even ignored the findings of the study's pathologists when the results didn't support his narrative, instead reporting what he needed for the lawsuit. Some of the children in the study weren't even diagnosed with autism, such as Child 7, who was included because his brother had autism, and Child 12, who had language impairments but not autism. Despite this, Wakefield altered their medical histories to claim they were autistic and implied their symptoms were linked to the MMR vaccine. In the end, Wakefield's study wasn't just bad science. It was a fraudulent piece of work created for financial gain. The study that started the anti-vaccine movement was based on lies, and no subsequent research has ever been able to replicate its findings. Data from millions of children worldwide has consistently shown no link between vaccines and autism. Unfortunately, moving on to the final segment, This wasn't even the worst thing about this study and what Andrew Wakefield had done, arguably. So, moving on to the next segment. We're going to answer a difficult topic regarding child abuse in medical research, particularly focusing on the actions of Andrew Wakefield himself. While conducting his study, Wakefield was on a mission to establish a connection between autism and bowel disorders, and to do so, he subjected children to an array of invasive and painful procedures. These children, many of whom were autistic, were hospitalized for a week and underwent sedation, blood sampling, colonoscopies, lumbar punctures, and MRI scans, among other uncomfortable tests. One doctor had even remarked that the list of procedures would be tough even for adults to endure, let alone children. Informed consent, as some of you may know who are also in medical school or even maybe even pre-med, a fundamental principle of medical ethics, requires that patients, or in the case of minors, their guardians, be fully informed of all risks before agreeing to any medical procedures. Unfortunately, Wakefield's consent forms, which the children's parents signed, failed to mention any risks. The forms described the procedures in a way that downplayed the dangers, stating that the procedures were, quote, well tolerated by children and, quote, painless. However, the reality was far from painless or safe. Some of these children as young as 3 years old were subjected to colonoscopies without any legit medical reason. In one horrifying case, a 5-year-old autistic boy had his bowel perforated in 12 different places during a colonoscopy, leading to multiple organ failure and lifelong disabilities. The family received nearly £500,000 in compensation, but the damage done to the child was irreversible. There are numerous reports from Deere's investigation highlighting how distressing the procedures were for these children. Some had to be held down by multiple staff members, others fainted or vomited, and one children had to be rushed to another hospital after a lumbar puncture went wrong. In addition to physical trauma, Wakefield recklessly prescribed anti-inflammatory medications to the children, despite many of them not even having any bowel disorders. These drugs pose serious risks, especially for children under the age of 6, including life-threatening complications like bleeding and infections. However, Wakefield's unethical behavior didn't stop there. He also gave one child an experimental drug without the approval of an ethics committee. The drug, dialyzable lymphocyte extract transfer factor, if those of you remember from earlier, similar to the autism cure proposed by the disgraced ex-physician Fudenberg, was also given. So Wakefield's methods for convincing parents were questionable. He allegedly even offered one parent a job with a company that stood to profit from the drug if it worked. Allegedly. Although no solid evidence supports this, the parent did mysteriously end up as managing director of a company connected to the drug. Somehow. Perhaps the most bizarre incident involves Wakefield's own child's birthday party, where he paid other children £5 each to draw their blood for his study. He openly shared this anecdote at a medical conference, boasting about how children fainted or threw up afterward, although he later claimed to have exaggerated for effect. His defense at his ethics hearing was equally baffling, insisting that just because the procedure didn't have ethics approval, it didn't mean it was unethical. His unethical behavior led to the longest inquiry in the history of the General Medical Council, which concluded back in 2010 that Wakefield had failed his duties as a doctor and caused distress and harm to the children in his care. He was struck off the medical register and could no longer practice medicine. The Lancet also formally retracted his study, recognizing that its conclusions were entirely false. Despite these findings, Wakefield continues to have supporters, many of whom are parents of autistic children who refuse to accept the truth. These parents, emotionally vulnerable and desperate for answers, have been exploited by Wakefield, who continues to profit from them. Wakefield has written books, produced documentaries, and given speeches at anti-vaccine conferences, all while living in luxury in Texas. His 2016 film, Vaxxed, even promotes buying bulk copies to distribute to legislators and educators, essentially turning his own followers into unpaid advertisers. The damage Wakefield has done isn't just financial or emotional. He has made his supporters complicit in spreading harmful misinformation. His followers, driven by the hope that they are protecting their children, have inadvertently helped spread vaccine misinformation that has led to real-world consequences, including outbreaks of preventable diseases. So, what can be done to combat vaccine misinformation and rebuild public trust? First and foremost, education has to be key. Public health campaigns need to do more than just provide facts. They need to connect with people on an emotional level. Parents, for example, are more likely to vaccinate their children if they understand not just the scientific evidence, but also the human impact, how vaccines protect their loved ones and their communities. Governments and healthcare providers need to invest in outreach programs that build relationships with communities where vaccine hesitancy is prevalent. This means working with local leaders, religious groups, and other trusted figures to promote accurate information in a way that resonates with the community's values. Social media platforms also have a responsibility to combat misinformation. While some platforms have taken steps to flag or remove anti-vaccine content, I think more still needs to be done. Algorithms should prioritize accurate, science-based content, and users should be directed to credible sources of information whenever they encounter false claims about vaccines. Lastly, I think it's important to listen. People who are hesitant about vaccines often have genuine fears and concerns, and dismissing them outright can deepen their mistrust. Engaging in respectful, open conversations about vaccines while providing clear and accurate information is one of the best ways to change minds. Thank you guys for listening and tuning in. This is honestly something that I'm pretty passionate about, the topic of anti-vaccine and misinformation, and just seeing the effects of how even today, like, you know, it's bringing back viruses that, you know, we thought were long dead. So I think it's important, like I mentioned there earlier, to educate, you know, be empathetic, really understand, or at least try to understand where the people who espouse these ideas, where they come from. Because like I said, a lot of it comes from a genuine concern. And especially those who do not come from a medical background, it's easy to kind of fall into that misinformation rabbit hole and conspiracy theories. And unfortunately, there are people out there who will seek to take advantage, like Dr. Wakefield, take advantage of people who are just less educated or maybe just aren't exactly aware of the science or just how much vaccines and the lack thereof, you know, impacts not only themselves, but everyone around them, their loved ones and their communities. I really wanted to cover this topic. I thought it was super interesting. And I think this vaccine autism paper is kind of what kickstarted the whole anti-vaccine movement. And it's crazy, in my opinion, just given the fact that, you know, when you really look into it, there's just not much there at all. And it was like practically immediately revoked and retracted. And I like how the fact that you yourself, if you have your own, you know, skepticisms and doubts, you can go and read the paper yourself. Although I will say, like, again, like those who aren't medically inclined, you know, might not really understand exactly how to interpret the data or just like how significant certain data points are and what to look for. It makes me wonder how important like media literacy might be moving forward in classes like high school. I mean, they might even be offering those classes now. I don't remember ever having that when I was in high school, but I do think media literacy is very important. I think an educated populace is really important to have, and that way, you know, less people can get taken advantage of for profit, and literally put other people's health at risk, including their own, whether they realize it or not. And obviously, you saw a lot of this happening during the COVID pandemic. Something else that kind of just like kickstarted the whole, or rather, like brought about an even greater rise of anti-vaccine sentiment. With the whole COVID pandemic situation. So I think that was also relevant to tie in. And seeing how that played out myself, again, just made me even more passionate about the subject, which I already was even before the pandemic. Because again, like, these are preventable diseases. These are preventable complications. These people don't have to get sick if they weren't either lied to or susceptible to this sort of propaganda and misinformation, and all for the sake of profit, like this guy. So, you know, I think it's important to have these conversations, have these discussions. A lot of it can be uncomfortable, for sure. But I think it's important to have these uncomfortable conversations because, you know, I think that's how you start making change. You got to be willing to have these uncomfortable conversations. And I think we need to fight back against the misinformation, especially those of us in the medical field. You know, it's our jobs to make the population healthier. And I can't think of a better way than to make sure everyone has their vaccines. That's one of the more proven ways of, you know, keeping a population healthy from diseases that are completely preventable. Thank you for listening and tuning in.